Welcome to the On Purpose Show with Susan Reeve and Rick Hansen. For compelling conversations, opening doors to discover and live a life work that's alive with passion and purpose. And now, here are Susan and Rick.
Hi, this is Susan. Welcome to another episode of the On Purpose Show. And as always, I am thrilled to be here with Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Susan. Today's show should be of interest to a lot of our listeners, particularly if you're growing a business or you're seriously exploring growing a business, doing something you love, but you hate marketing. And if that's true, you're really going to love our call today.
Well, I can certainly relate to that, and I love the title of today's episode, Marketing for Hippies, because I'm a hippie from way back in the 60s, so I'm eager to hear our conversation with our guests.
I'd say we both qualify, Susan. And our guest talks about the notion that marketing can be guilt-free, respectful, beautiful, inspiring, honoring, fun, warm, gracious, quirky, and honest, and might even be more effective because of all that. So we're going to be interviewing Tad Hargrave, and he's a hippie who developed a knack for marketing and then learned how to be a hippie again. And for almost a decade, he's been bringing refreshing and unorthodox ideas to conscious entrepreneurs and green businesses that help them grow their organizations and businesses without selling their souls. So welcome, Tad.
Thanks so much.
We're really glad to have you here today and look forward to tapping into some of your wisdom. And the starting place that we like on all of our shows is just to hear a little bit about some of the turning points on your journey that led you to your on-purpose livelihood.
Well, I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta, and I went to a Waldorf school, which some of your listeners may be familiar with, an alternative sort of hippie school. And I grew up in that community. And in grade 7, got very enamored with the world of personal growth. And was watching John Bradshaw and Leo Buscaglia on PBS, discovered Tony Robbins stuff, Stephen Covey, and just really delved into that. And that led me to working for a franchise of a leadership development company, doing seminars and workshops and doing sales for them. And there was a lot of stuff I learned at that around marketing that was really good that I still value today. And some of it, there was an edge of something pushy that didn't feel particularly honoring. But I was like 18, 19, so I just kind of was going along with it. And I had a few moments where friends and friends of family were giving me feedback that I was being really slick. And I was losing sleep over it. It just didn't feel good. People on phone, I was doing telemarketing for them. People on the phone would be so embarrassing even to talk about it. It's like they're like, God, you know, like, what's wrong with you? You know, can't you just hear me? You know, because I wasn't really listening. I was trying to use a bunch of techniques on them to get them to say yes. And then that organization collapsed. And so I ended up moving to Santa Cruz to work with a group down there that did summer camps all around North America. And that had much more of an activist sort of hippie bent to it. And that was the time where I started really questioning a lot of my politics and beliefs around capitalism and money and business and marketing. So there was a bit of unpacking for a while, but I still had this nerdy fascination with knowledge and so many good friends who were trying to start green businesses, you know, and I could tell their marketing was terrible. And so there was this sort of urge to help my friends and also the urge to really unpack what was it that I'd learned that didn't feel good, and was it possible to market in a way that could feel good? And there have been a lot of wonderful influences along the way of that. And I think one of the big moments is actually there's a fellow named Ari Galper who has a website now, unlockthegame.com. But he used to call it reverse selling, and I remember that grabbed me because I was so sick of the way I, you know, had been selling and been taught to. So the notion of something that was a reverse of that really grabbed me. And he was one of the first people that sort of, I think, gave me the keys to start unpacking a lot of my experience. Because what he talked about was so anathema to what I'd learned. It was so the opposite of everything I'd learned. And the heart of that was that questioning this whole idea of sales pressure. That I think in sales, traditional sales training, most of the stuff that I went through with a lot of the, you know, big names, sales pressure is a something that's not even really acknowledged. It's, if it is acknowledged, it's something you're supposed to push through. You're supposed to overcome people's objections. You're supposed to handle them, you know. And he was the first person to lift up that maybe sales pressure is unnatural, and maybe our only job as salespeople is to diffuse that pressure. And he was definitely the first person to point out where the sales pressure was coming from in the first place, and that it was coming from kind of a combination of our language and our mindset that was all built around the agenda of getting them to say yes and getting them to buy. And that our agenda to get somebody to buy creates pressure. You know, I think you could extend it. Our agenda to get anyone to do anything creates pressure. And I'd never considered that. I just thought, oh, if I'm good enough at these techniques, if I am skillful enough, if I practice enough, people won't even notice I'm using them and they'll just say yes. But it didn't work like that. It comes across all weird and awkward. And that actually had more people saying no probably than I would have said yes. So, yeah, and then there was just years of kind of me figuring it out and cobbling together a marketing worldview based on what I was learning.
So I'm really curious to hear what it is that you've learned so that now you feel good about marketing and the work you do with others is to have them feel good about it.
Yeah. Gosh, a lot. And the, I would say the heart of it is just I learned that it was possible, to market and sell in a way that felt good, which was a relief. And I think that the heart of it, the real central thing that I learned is that there are kind of two different places we can be coming from in selling or marketing. And one is the, what I was talking about, the agenda to get people to buy. And yet that agenda, you know, in fact, for everyone listening, a little experiment to try. If you take your right and left hand in front of your heart and you put them together like in a prayer position and you hold them there, and then what I want you to do is push as hard as you can with your right hand. Push as hard as you can with your right hand. Push. And I didn't say push back with the left, but push with your right hand as hard as you can. And you'll notice that your hands are probably still right where they were in the beginning, that they didn't move because your left hand pushed back. And I didn't say for your left hand to push back. In fact, I didn't say for your left hand to push back. And yet, for most people, their hands will have moved very little. And that's the real dynamic in sales. When we come in with the agenda to get somebody to do something out of their autonomy and their need for that, they will resist and push back, even if it's good for them, which is interesting. So that agenda is what doesn't feel good. When we feel like something is happening underneath the surface, it's not being talked about, but I'm being led down a garden path somewhere without my consent or knowledge, really. And then there's another agenda. And so, whereas the agenda to sell is hidden, nobody talks about that, especially the salesperson. There's another agenda that is not hidden, that can be talked about very openly, and that's the agenda to get to the truth. And the truth is a very specific question. And that question is it a fit? And when our marketing comes from this place of wondering, is it a fit, we move from doing a pitch into actually just having a human conversation. And to answer that question, we actually have to know very clearly who is a fit for us. Like, that's not a given. Most people, you know, at my workshops, if I were to press them and say, okay, who's a perfect fit for your business? I would get a very fuzzy answer. And what that means is that their marketing is very fuzzy, which means they're going to get some mix of people, some who are a fit, some who aren't. And what that means is that they're going to get some people who are not a fit for what they're offering, who will take advantage of it, who will then have a mediocre to bad experience because it wasn't for them. But they won't think, oh, it just wasn't for me. They'll tell everyone this was no good. And you get this kind of bad word of mouth spiral. But if you're marketing from a place of a real sense of clarity about who's a fit, and your marketing is not a seduction thing, but a filtering thing, where you're actively pushing people away who are not a fit, what happens is, in the beginning, it's maybe a little smaller, but you get people who are a fit. And that means they have really good results from working with you because it's a match for them. And then they have, you know, good things to say, and your business builds in that way with word of mouth. And word of mouth is the primary way that marketing actually works in the real world. So that's the main thing I've learned, is that when we orient around trying to establish if it's a fit, that's what makes it work better.
I love that. It does sound so much more natural. And in my experience, you know, I know I'll push back if it feels like someone's trying to get me to do something, like you say, even if I actually want it.
Yeah.
Ted, you've done some really amazing work that I've seen in the past around this area of niche.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, you know, that's what you were just touching on, is that our clarity, if we're in a business, about who we serve is really like a foundation for the business. Say more about anything about that that is important for someone who's maybe exploring starting a business or is in an early stage.
Sure. I've actually been working a lot on this recently. I've got a new thing coming out called the Niching Spiral. And it's interesting because the word niche, I think in this scene, this kind of personal growth business scene, tends to be used synonymously with target market. So when people talk about what's your niche, what they're actually asking is sort of who do you work with, who's your target market, who's your perfect client or chosen audience or whatever, however you articulate it. And I want to lift up the possibility that niche is a bigger conversation than just who. And the way I like to define it is your niche is your role in the community. More in an ecosystem approach, that there's a particular place for you. There's a role in the community. And in business, you know, I guess that's the role in the community that you want to be known for. And that includes both what we're offering, how we're offering it, and to whom we're offering it, you know, and where and when and all that. All of that is a part of our role. Yeah, it's such a central thing, because what most people do is they just say, oh, I can help everybody with everything. Maybe they don't say it in those words, but that's what's implied by the refusal to make any decisions about what their role is going to be, because they want to stay free. They don't want to be, you know, locked down into anything. That's where it goes. So the first thing is just this. It's good to have a role in the community, because if we don't, we never really feel like we belong in that community, and we don't get the benefits of community. And also, when we really find a sweet spot, when we find a role, we free up other people to do other roles, and that's a much more relaxing proposition. You know, I have a colleague who works with people on their bios. And it's so great, because that's not my strength. So when somebody is struggling with their bio, I send them to her. You know, and when she meets people who are just kind of starting out and like, I want to market, but it feels gross, she sends them to me. And so you start to develop this web of relationships with all the other people, and where we kind of tend to stop seeing competition even. Because it's not competition, it's just we're all doing different things. And when somebody comes to doing something similar, we start to learn, well, what are you doing that's, you know, how is it different than what I'm doing? And then there's opportunity for even more differentiation, for both people to step even more into the work that they really want to do and that they're best at. And what I found is that there are two sort of general approaches to figuring this out. And props to George Cao, who came up with this idea as well. We both sort of independently had this exact same thought and called it pretty much the same thing. And so we talk a lot about there's the entrepreneur path and there's the artist path. And so the entrepreneur path is where you notice there's an underserved target market. So you start with the who. You're like, man, there's this target market. There's this group of people that need something. And then the afterthought is what? The afterthought's what could I offer them that would be useful for them? Whereas the artist, it's the opposite. The artist starts with the what. The artist starts with, I'm so inspired to create this thing. And then the afterthought is, now, who would this be for? You know, who might want to buy this thing? Who'd be interested? And so, you know, with each of them, you have to do both. You have to have if you're going to be in business, I think you've got to have a bit of both of that entrepreneurial and the artistic tendency, because maybe that's why entrepreneurs are such a rare breed in a way, because, you know, if you were just the entrepreneur, you might be able to notice all these underserved target markets, but not be able to come up with anything really creative and awesome that they would want, because there's not an artistic bone in your body. So you wouldn't have the creativity to even come up with a good offer. But similarly, you know, Vincent van Gogh, poor fellow, you know, he creates some of the most incredible art in the world and dies poor. And, you know, I wish he'd had a friend who'd been like, Vincent, everyone here thinks you're a jerk. But in France, they would love it, you know, and could start to figure out who might be interested in this art. So those are the two sort of general paths that I recommend. And for most people who I work with in the holistic scene, there's a lot of artists in there. You know, they've already figured out, I want to do shamanism or I want to be a life coach. And they haven't really figured out who they want to help. They just know that that's something that they want to offer. And so often what we need to do then is kind of dig in a little bit more about how do they want to offer it, what exactly is it that they want to offer. And that, so I just find this niching is kind of a bouncing back and forth between what are we trying to offer and who's it for. And sometimes when we make a decision about a particular group, that actually affects what we want to offer. You know, if somebody's a life coach and I say, oh, you know what, I really want to be a life coach for women going through midlife transitions. Boom. Okay, now suddenly it doesn't necessarily just look like a typical life coach thing, because now there may be women's circles. There may be certain books that are recommended that you wouldn't recommend to just anybody around that. You know, if you do interviews, sometimes you can be doing interviews with women and people who are experts and have wisdom to share around that transition. Suddenly it becomes much more specific and something that you could be known for. So, yeah, those are some initial thoughts anyways.
And so, Ted, I'm wondering if somebody's coming to you, let's say somebody is working in a corporate setting and they're wondering about whether or not they're ready to step out on their own and really don't even know how to think about it. Now, do you work with people like that?
No, I tend not to. There's other colleagues I often pass them on to. But I've had some conversations with people. I mean, I have some thoughts on it, which I'm happy to share, but I would tend to pass those on to people who focus more on that in particular.
And so who is it who would come to you, and how would you work with them?
I tend to get entrepreneurs who are, they've been in business for a few years. They're often either holistic practitioners, life coaches, or into permaculture, and they don't have enough of the kind of clients that they want, and marketing feels gross to them. And so they're in this kind of catch-22 where they need to market to get more clients, but they feel terrible about marketing. They don't like it, and they don't really understand how it works, and when they do it, they feel like they're flushing money down the toilet because it's not effective. So then so there's this kind of, I need clients, so I'm going to market, but I don't feel good, but I need to, and they're in that kind of quandary. And so then when they come to me, I help them figure out a way of marketing that can feel really good to them, and that can actually feel like that's an expression of their values. And the impact of that is it usually frees them up to actually move and do marketing and start getting more clients instead of kind of just sitting in a vicious loop of, trying to figure it out. But, you know, it's interesting when you're the person leaving the corporation. One thing I have seen people come to me having just done that leap and suddenly find themselves in a very desperate situation because they had, this business and it was, they're working for the man or whatever, and things were fine. And then they think, well, if I build it, they will come. So they leap and there's really nothing to catch them. And a lot of them find themselves in this place where they are just totally broke and desperate. And that's a really hard place to build anything from when people are desperate. So it's interesting for a lot of clients who I meet who are in this just these dire financial straits. One of my things I often recommend is like get a job. Get a part-time job. Get a full-time, just take some of the pressure off, because trying to be a creative genius and build a really amazing business on the fly while you're panicked is the hardest, and one of my colleagues, Mark Silver, you may know, he talks about there are four stages of business. There's the sort of creation phase, the concentration phase, the momentum phase, and the independence. And the creation phase is where people are just starting and they're experimenting and they don't even know exactly what their business is yet. Maybe they've got some ideas, but those often change very quickly once they start doing business in the real world. And in that creation phase, it's really just them. They're a total solopreneur. They don't have any help. And they don't have any clear sense of their niche or their platform, what they're about, their brand. And they're not going to support themselves financially at stage one. No one does. Stage two is the concentration where people start to make decisions about their niche and their platform. And what do I want to be known for? And they hone in a bit. At this point, maybe they've got like a part-time assistant, and they're moving forward. It's paying it. It's bringing in some money, but they're eking by at this point. It's just the bare minimum. And then the momentum phase is where you've really got your business working for you, and it's you probably got a few staff. It's just supporting you really well. And the independence is you can go travel for 6 months or a year, and your business keeps going and keeps paying you, which is the optional phase. But so I share those four because I see that a lot of people, when they take that leap, it's different because, some people I find, while they've been in the corporation working that job, they've been designing their new business. They've been thinking about it. They've built a website. They've been tinkering for years and years and years. And so when they step out of the corporate job, they're in concentration already, they're just like, and it's maybe not paying a lot, but they're paying the bills and they're building. Versus when people leave without any idea or just a loose idea, I want to be an entrepreneur, I want to be self-employed, something very vague, and then they step out, they start drowning very fast. And I just want to get them back to dry land for a little bit so they can figure it out. It's hard to learn to swim when you're drowning.
There's a lot of wisdom in that. Thank you, Tad. You've been giving a great deal of value here, and I think our listeners are just soaking it up. Thank you. On the part of niche that you were talking about, and I'm looking forward to going to your website. One, I want to make sure our listeners know where to find you, and that's at www.marketingforhippies.com. And there is a lot of resources there. I don't know how many blog posts you have, but you have just a ton of practical, useful information and videos and all kinds of things. So where, if someone goes to your site, where would is there a place where they should start?
Just watch the video on the homepage and I'll tell you what to do. Yeah.
Perfect. One thing we always like to ask is this thing we call one small step, like something our listeners could do this week. And if there's someone, and let's assume that they have some clarity about where they want to go. Maybe they're in business or they're heading in that direction and they have clarity. but they don't have clarity about niche.
Right.
What's one small step that they might be able to do this week to just begin moving in that direction?
Man, well, this is one of the first things that I tell anyone to do, and I don't understand why this isn't talked about more in most marketing workshops I've seen, but is to build a Hubs database. And so what that is, so there's, I think the traditional way of looking at marketing is sort of a cold approach, where we're doing cold calls, going to random business mixers, handing out business cards, posters, billboards, just where there's a totally, there's no relationship. It's just a cold approach. And that's very hard to do. It doesn't get a lot of results. We're basically standing across from somebody and saying, hey, give me money, you know, hire me. There's another approach, which is the warm approach, which is where we're standing there, our ideal client is standing across from us, but now there's a third person, and that person is already friends with our ideal client. They already have a lot of love and respect and trust between them, and we befriend that person, because that person also isn't just connected to that one person across from us. They're connected to a bunch of people like them. They're connected to a whole crowd of people who could be our ideal client. And so we build this relationship with the hub, and that hub introduces us to the whole crowd. And then when we get introduced by that person, it's a very different dynamic. You know, if I went to a party, sure, it's filled with all my ideal clients, and I'm walking around meeting people individually. First of all, that's going to take a lot of time, and they don't know me. So even if what I'm saying sounds relevant, you know, there's likely to be some watchfulness. As there should be, because, you know, who am I? But if I show up at the party and the host says, oh, my God, everybody, you know, clinks his glass, gets everyone to stop, says, everyone, I want you to meet Tad Hargrave. I'm so happy he could make it to the party. He runs marketing for hippies. He can help a lot of you with your marketing. You know, he gives a whole rap like that. That's a whole different vibe now. You know, it's a different scenario. And so this idea of hubs, of figuring out where can we find our ideal clients and mapping that out, to me, is the bottom line. It's the basis of any effective marketing, because to me, the most effective marketing is always through hubs. You know, I can write an article, put it on my website, and it sits there lonely forever, or I could write the same article and find a website that my ideal clients visit in the tens of thousands and post it there. And that's a better response. I could email my list and do a talk to my own people, or I could speak at a conference that has like 2,000 people who are my ideal clients. That's better. You know, so this idea of hubs, finding out where my ideal people are, who they're connected with, what media they read, what groups they're a part of, what other businesses they, you know, support, and just mapping that out, creating a spreadsheet, you know. And if you don't know how to create a spreadsheet, there's a teenager in your life somewhere who does. But to make one, because that is, it's just the first thing I want to work on with any client. If they are clear, if they do have a basic sense of a niche or a platform, and they have a sense of who's the, you know, what we said at the beginning, who's a good fit for them. If that's clear, then I want to go right to that. The Hubs database, because you don't even have to do anything with that database for 6 months or a year. Just let it build. And eventually, you've got this list of here's where all of your perfect people are. And then it's just a matter of building relationships with those people in whatever way makes sense. You know, I would just go for coffee once a week with a new hub, email them, just get to know them. It seems a little slower in the beginning, but in short order, it becomes far more powerful than the cold approach.
That makes so much sense. And it's such a great starting place. And this time has just flown by. We have about another minute. So our final question is, what's one gem of wisdom you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think the thing I want to say is to encourage people to be more you. Be more of yourself. Be more honest and real in your business, because that's going to turn a lot of people off, and it's going to turn a lot of people on. And most entrepreneurs have so many people who are maybes, who are sitting on the fence of whether to do business with them, and maybes don't buy, and maybes almost always become no. So be more yourself and let it get a polarized response. Be more honest about your opinion about things. Be more real, be more clear about that, and watch that you get a polarized response that includes more people saying yes to you.
Great advice. Thank you so much, Tad.
You're welcome.
This was pure gold, Tad. Thank you.
Wow, that was really great. And just a reminder to our listeners, Tad's website is marketingforhippies.com.
I was just on there the other day, Susan, and there is just a huge amount of very useful information. So go and check it out. And we'll see you here next week on our next episode of the On Purpose Show.
Join Susan and Rick next week right here on the On Purpose Show, and join the conversation at facebook.com/onpurposeshow.